showing it to people, and he feels that the skull should be handled, should be felt and experienced by people, and that's why she's so open to taking it around and showing it. And she's the cutest little old lady. I just adore her. I asked her, here you have a priceless artifact. It's really one of the most incredible artifacts on this planet. And I said, what do you do to protect it? And she looked at me like I was an idiot. She took me to the door, and there she had a London Bobby Club. And she said, if anybody tries to get in here, I'll hit him on the head. And it's just an absolute scream, you know, the way this priceless...
Well, you've experienced the visual images that come up from the skull.
I'm a little bit like Alan Vaughn. Every once in a while, I push my mind out into the ether and see what it picks up. And one of the things that I found, some of my colleagues, some of them are psychic, some of them are not, have found is that the skull is very much like a giant computer bank. In other words, it picks up information and stores it. And if you, for example, most people aren't aware of this ability, and one of the greatest people on the planet with this ability is Peter Hercus, who lives in Studio City, California.
Right here around the corner.
Yes, and Peter can touch any object that some other human being has touched, and it's incredible to watch him get information from that one-touch contact. He can go on for hours doing a dossier on a person, starting with their birth and going on into the future.
Well, did Peter ever touch the crystal skull?
No, it's one of the things that he and I have got on our schedule. We've got about 100 things like that we should do, but we got to do that, because if there's going to be a solution to the mystery of the skull, Peter will find it. So, Peter, I hope you're listening to me. We've got to take a trip up to Canada and do it.
Well, see.
But anyway, that's the nature of the skull. It has all this information on it, and it's not too difficult to access in terms of place, time, and so on and so on.
It'll even play back information that you have given it if you watch it longer.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, you can probe it for things that happened tens of thousands of years ago and so on. And it's a vast, complex subject, and I hope that the skull is given a home that is proper for its great value.
Well, I don't know why it's not being subjected to the most strenuous kind of scientific examination.
Well, unfortunately, you know, parapsychology is not exactly high-level, high-energy science.
I don't know, but if you've got an artifact that is playing back images, and even the photographs of the images change, as is the case with the photographs that were taken on Kodak film, the photographs change, you know you're dealing with something quite unusual.
Yes, and I've tried with my little influence to get major foundations to get behind this as a major study. And I'm making a little progress, but we have not launched a major study yet.
Well, we'll get deeply into that with Nick Nesserino next week, and
I thank
you very much for sharing a little bit of the work that you have done with the Mitchell Hedges skull. And Leroy wants to talk to you in just a moment about those low-frequency waves and how harmful they are around his house. And we'll get to that in just a second. I'm Bill Jolaire, Leroy.
Hello.
Yes.
Nice to listen to your show. Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good evening.
Just calling from Chatsworth here. The question I have is something to do with high-tension wires and electrical pollution. Does it have an effect on people? Let's say, like where I live, I have some high voltage wires right outside my apartment, and I wonder if that's a negative to my being.
Electronic smog.
Yeah, there's been a lot of study done on that, particularly by Dr. Robert Becker, formerly of Syracuse University, now retired, and they have shown that people living near high tension lines, usually about 750,000 volt potential. Do have adverse effects, behavioral effects, and cows, for example, produce less milk, and there are other signs of biological effects. Now, we believe that it's not so much the high potential that does it, but the magnetic vector or the magnetic part of the field that does the dirty work. And there's some studies done, strangely enough, by the U.S. Navy, and published in Science Magazine February 23rd, 1984, in which the Navy tried to find out what frequencies have the maximum effect on the DNA of cells. And they clearly showed that somewhere between 60 hertz and 76 hertz, there was a maximum effect in what's called mutagenesis. That means pushing cells toward the direction of cancer. And that was a shocker when it came out, because the Navy has been trying, U.S. Navy has been trying to sell American public for some 25 years on the idea that ELF is good for your health, and that nobody should have struck the transmission of ELF to submarines.
Well,
that's a very interesting and highly controversial area.
Of course, the ELF communication with submarines is out of that. The Russians now do it verbally.
Yeah.
With Scalar. Thank you very much, Leroy, for that question. We're going to take a break for the news at 10. Be right back with Dr. Andrea Fajarich and Alan Vaughn. Two of Open Mind. My name is Bill Jenkins. My guest tonight is Dr. Andrea Fajarich. He is on our conference line. We're talking about, oh, you name it, and we'll talk about it. In studio with me is also Alan Vaughn. And while the news was going on, something rather delightful, I want to share that with you, if I may. So come on in. Our good friends at the Alexandria 2 bookstore drop by. Ralph, say hello.
Hello.
And congratulations to the store and all of the good work that you're doing down there. Let's see. Try it again. Say hello.
Hello.
There you go. I forgot to turn your mic on, Ralph. I was going to talk to you.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
And everybody was going to have to hear you by ESP. What is this that you dropped by here?
This is a new creation that you helped us create. It's looks like an Easter basket.
Yeah, it does, but what kind of Easter eggs are in that basket?
Runes, incense, candles, a couple books, some crystals, all kinds of neat things. And some things you'll discover when you open it up.
I'm looking forward to it.
This is something we're going to put together for the holiday season to make some baskets for people to give. As gifts.
Well, it's a birthday present for Bill. I didn't even know that you knew I had a birthday coming down the line.
ESP?
Yeah, ESP, yes. I'm going to be 25 on Tuesday, or 26, or somewhere again. I thank you very much. It is just gorgeous. What's in the mummy?
We have all kinds of stones. Amethyst, sodalite, carnelian, tourmaline, and about a dozen others.
All kinds of things. Just little goodies from the Alexandria 2 bookstore. Huh?
Yeah.
All wrapped up in a... It's a beautiful gift.
Thank you.
And I thank you very, very much.
We'd like to thank you also, Bill. Your show's been a lot of support, and the listeners, and it's given us a lot of reason to keep going on, and the feedback's been tremendous and phenomenal. And we appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you and Victoria for the marvelous work you do at Alexandria, too. And bringing the books, the information, the ambiance and the atmosphere for those that are on the quest that want to find out that there is more to life than most of us know. And it's very, very exciting out there. I'm excited about the success of your show, of your store. And very delighted and honored to be a part of it.
Thank you.
My congratulations to you and Victoria, and thank you so very much for the basket. I can't wait to get it. But I'll have to wait till Tuesday.
Okay.
I don't think it'll last.
I don't think so either.
I think that the temptation will be too much to rip into that beautiful thing. But let us go on. We have Andrea Fajarich on the line. Andrea?
Yes.
Are you ready? You should see this basket. It's got everything in there but your little clock.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to bring some clocks out there to sell, so you'll see some.
All right. All right, Roger's been waiting. You're on the line, Roger. Welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. I'd first like to ask the doctor where these watches or where these watches can be obtained with the 8 megahertz signal.
We'll be bringing, my staff will be bringing them out to the 2 seminars, and the people who are arranging.
Can you speak up a little bit more, Andrea? That line is terrible.
People arranging the seminar will also have some for sale, so they'll be out there when we get out there October 18th and 19th.
Would you be happen to be giving any conferences in Honolulu?
No, but I think I probably will do it because I have a lot of good friends there.
It's a fun place to go, too.
Oh, I love it.
in connection with the scalar wave thing, have you found that anybody, you know, government seems to ignore the whole thing, yet in a sense it seems like this is the strongest type of war activity. The Russians are actually waving against us.
An undeclared war.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you, and I must say I've spent a lot of time in our nation's capital, Washington, talking to senators, congressmen, military people about this, and the general reaction, my God, how come I didn't know about this? And then they check around a little bit, you know, through official channels, and they find out that it's something you're not supposed to talk about, and pretty soon they drop out of it. So the general policy of our government is not to let the public know what's going on, because they're, as in the case of the UFO story for the last 40 years, afraid people are going to panic. But that's not true at all. People, you know, are common sense folk, and if somebody says there's a war going on, they say, well, let's put on some armor, let's defend ourselves. And that's all I'm saying, that, you know, it is going on. It's possible to defend yourself, and we've now worked out some very simple technologies available to everybody to do this. So that's what the battle is all about.
There seems to be a tendency in Washington that only the bushy brains of Washington should deal with the weighty problems of the day. That we, the sheep of the United States of America, are to keep ourselves involved in the RTD problems and things like that.
You know,
but
just, chew away at the grass and don't give me any trouble, man.
Yeah, they just forget that the combined genius of the American people is rather strong, but they need to include us.
On the ELF, you were mentioning that we are also engaging in it against the Russians.
Yes, we are. We have giant transmitters in a certain place in Australia, in McMurdo Sound in the Antarctic. We have one in South Africa, a couple of others still under construction. So the warfare is going on, and what's bad about it is that wherever the beams go, let's say from the Antarctic to Russia, they cross a lot of living things in the way. And every living thing in the path of ELF is affected, whether it's plants, bacteria, sea creatures. For example, I'm sure everybody has noticed in the newspapers for the last 7 or 8 years that dolphins have been beaching themselves.
Right.
Whales and so on and so on. The reason this is going on, and nobody will admit it, is that these creatures are ultra-sensitive to these ELF warfare signals, and the only way they can get away from them is to get out of the water. And, this is what's terrible. Every creature that's alive is being punished by this, I think, very stupid type of warfare. Nobody wins.
I have the feeling what you also are saying is that even though the Russians are engaging it, we're probably more stupid to retaliate with the same weapon.
It's the only retaliation against it.
You see, right in the very beginning, and I was very active back in the early 70s, 76, 77, in trying to capture the attention of the Western nations, Canada, U.S., the U.N., etc., and nobody would respond because the word went out, you don't talk about this thing. At that time, the reason was very simple. The U.S. was way behind the Soviets. It took them about 3 years to even begin to catch up. And that policy has remained ever since then. And I think every citizen who is aware of this should look into it as briefly as possible and get on the back of his representative, whether it be in the state or the federal government or Congress, whatever. I think this is a concern to everybody.
Well, I get reports, for instance, Andrea, and I know you're familiar with this, particularly here in the Los Angeles area, of those strange signatures in the sky.
Yes. Of
the radio formation of clouds and the square crosshatch cloud formations. As you know, nature has always made square clouds.
Yes.
But we have square clouds that happen over Los Angeles quite often. Quite often they look like they were made by a ruler.
Yeah, well, you have one of the great experts in the United States in your area, Dr. Bob Beck.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly is aware of everything going on there, and he certainly can be an effective guide to the public in terms of, getting the facts before them so something can be done.
All right, Roger, does that help you?
Yeah, do you feel that we should disengage ourselves from the waging this ELF on our end?
Well, I think any disengagement would be helpful, but, you know, this is war, and you can't get one side or the other to make the first move.
Right.
You've got to have some kind of diplomatic initiative at the summit.
Hopefully they'll talk about that.
That's on the agenda in the coming summit meeting.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome.
All right, Roger, appreciate your call.
My pleasure.
Our numbers, if you want to talk to Dr. Andrea Pohorich, let me give them to you again. Los Angeles, 520-TALK, T-A-L-K. San Fernando Valley, 990. All of the numbers end in TALK. In Orange County, 750. Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, 244. 448 in the San Gabriel Valley. It's 679 in the South Bay area and down in Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, that area. Your number is 639. And your chance to talk to Andrea Pohorich and to Alan Vaughn on Open Mind on KABC. So Andrea Pohorich, and in studio is Alan Vaughn, and we are talking to Pedro. Hi, Pedro.
Ah, good evening, Guillermo. I mean, William. I'm sorry about that. I'm really glad you have an open mind program because I read the most fascinating book from Mexico City. It's about exactly what you're talking about. It's very controversial. And let me tell you a little bit about the author. Author first, pardon my English. This man is a priest, Father Rosario Sanchez Munguia, who was detained by the Mexican government during World War II under orders from the United States because he supported the Axis. Now, this book, very good. This man has tremendous insight, and it's most fascinating. Okay, his whole thesis is on the UFOs. I mean, it's about how the UFOs come out of... He believes they come out of Tel Aviv in Israel, under there. You know, he had his thesis, they come from the bottom of the earth, but out of Tel Aviv. He believes that the Zionist Jews that fly these things, that they dip over, they pass over, they take the Christian children, the white children, and they suck the blood, and they drop them back down on the earth. Now, this may be hard to believe.
Pedro?
Yes? Hola.
I have an open mind, Pedro, but you just, crossed over.
I like your name, Andrea, your friend, because you might be Mr. Artukovich. I'm just being deported for this country.
All right, Pedro.
That's what I got to answer. Hire him.
Okay. Oh, boy. You know, that happens so very rare. I think maybe that's the first or maybe the second time in 8 years that kind of a call has come through.
Yeah, that's embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it's embarrassing for Pedro, I would think.
Well, you know, Andre, didn't you see a number of UFOs in Israel?
Yes, but they weren't gobbling up Christians and all that.
Oh, well, yes.
With a Heil Hitler attached.
With a little mythology.
Yeah.
You know, one of the UFO incidents that fascinates me is the time that Ira Zabel, who was with the Wisconsin Society for Psychical Research, was riding with you and Uri in a car through the desert in Israel, seeing these incredible UFO displays, lights flashing all around, and then you picked up some hitchhiker and he hadn't seen a thing.
Yeah, that was one of the things we learned early in our observations of real UFOs. When I say real UFOs, I mean extraterrestrials, because I also believe there are UFOs that are used as military weapons on the planet Earth because they were developed by the Germans, clearly documented in 1944.
They were making some good strides at it. They didn't have the power plants, but they certainly had the airframe.
Yeah, they were doing great things, and of course the U.S. picked up the technology, and Boeing developed it, and now they're operational, etc. But I'm not talking about that type. Anybody who knows UFOs can spot those. But the kind we saw in Israel was truly extraterrestrial craft. And I'll give you just one quick example, which you briefly alluded to already. Uri and I and Isla Zebel were in the war zone, and what we were doing were using Uri's abilities to distinguish real signals on the radar, certain false signals, and the Israeli military were picking up UFOs on the radar, but they didn't know the signature, and then Uri is good at that, so he could straighten them out. Anyway, in going back to Tel Aviv, unfortunately, being in a war zone, we could not carry cameras or any other recording equipment, so we were not able to document what we witnessed subsequently on film. But to make a long story short, we had a staff sergeant driving a command jeep, and we had a colonel sitting beside him, who was our escort, and the three of us were sitting in the back of the command jeep. And I looked to the left along, we were in the Mitla Pass area, incidentally, and I looked up at a ridge to our left, which was probably 500-600 feet high, and I saw an incredibly huge UFO, which was very metallic, like anodized aluminum in appearance. And I noticed several odd things immediately. First, I guesstimated probably the length of an American football field, namely about 100 yards, but I couldn't be sure of that because it's desert air. But the thing that that really was striking was 6:30 in the morning was that there was no reflection of the morning sun off this craft. All the rays were absorbed. And furthermore, there was no shadow under the craft. All the rays again were absorbed. And so I really was puzzled by this whole thing, and I nudged Uri and pointed to the thing without saying a word, and he immediately saw what I saw, and then Isla saw the same thing. So he wanted to know if the two officers in front could see the same thing. So Uri spoke to them in Hebrew and said, what is that funny-looking thing on the top of that ridge? And they looked up there, and they said, oh, that's just some sagebrush. And that thing followed us for an hour and a half to our base, air base, where we took the military plane back to Tel Aviv. And they never saw it, and yet we saw it as clear as we saw each other. But that sort of thing we saw over and over again. And what I learned from that is that the beings in the UFOs can command or take over your perception and your sensation of what you think you're experiencing. So I myself am never quite sure, as an honest observer and scientific observer, what I am looking at when I'm in the presence of a true UFO experience, because I know they can control your mind.
Well, I have another observer here that is a part of the regular crew here at KABC, and perhaps you know, you've heard of him. His name is Paul Harvey.
Of course.
And this was from a broadcast of Paul's on September 23rd of this year. Let's take a listen to see what Paul had to say.
UFO over Luxembourg this morning. Police saw it. Air traffic controllers and commuters saw it. Five or six bright green lights traveling at incredible speed at about 600 feet altitude. It did not show up on radar.
So, Paul Harvey talks about the flying saucers.
Yes, my son, who lives in Holland, was driving back to Holland from Munich, Germany, where he put me on a plane, and he didn't see the craft himself, but he talked to many witnesses who saw the craft over five country area, and it made all the local papers in France, Germany, Belgium, Luxembourg, and Holland.
Well, it got on Paul Harvey News on ABC, so we can tip our hat to ABC for just a little bit. I'm talking Dr. Andrea Paharic, along with Alan Vaughn here. We're talking about UFOs, scalar waves, ELF waves. We've even gotten to the crystal skull. And most anything you want to talk about. These other men can talk about it with you. I may, to remind you of something that's very important. We touched upon it earlier with Dr. Paharic, and that is the Million Minutes for Peace. Worldwide movement that is sanctioned by the United Nations and almost every nation in the country, and every corporation are putting their stamp of approval upon it and their support. Mayor Bradley, the people here in Los Angeles, they'll be having a great gathering at the Hollywood Bowl on October 18th from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. It is free. The Hollywood Bowl people very graciously donated the bowl for this effort. On that Sunday afternoon, I'm going to be there. A lot of people will be there. We would like for you to be there. And there has been a wonderful song written to go about this idea of pledging a moment, a minute, for peace. And we'll talk about the power of that. We touched upon it a little bit earlier, in a little bit. But I want you to listen to this and pledge, if you will, a minute for peace.
It seems that's how we got to the moon. And then you keep it in mind all of the time. And miracles really will happen. I know it's true. No matter what the odds are, if you just believe it, you'll always find an answer. Remember, 1 minute becomes an hour. 1 seedling becomes a flower. heart of every being created. And if together we try, it's not to deny, our love will unite every nation. And with this love, we'll build a new foundation so that everyone will live their life in peace. Just remember, 1 minute becomes an hour. One seedling becomes a flower.
A minute for peace, a minute of thoughts for peace, and let's find out how you can do that. Hello, who are we talking to here?
To Joan Derry.
Hello, Joan.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Welcome back to Open Mind. We had a marvelous time with Joan as we first talked about the Million Minutes for Peace campaign that's going on all over the world. Somebody wants to get involved in this, Joan. What do they do?
Well, there's several ways they can do it. They can either call me here at 850-1530, and I will send them a pledge form or take their pledge over the phone.
Now, this is not a pledge for money. This is a pledge for
a minute
of your time.
Right. From 1 to 30 minutes between September 16th and October 16th. So we're getting close to October 16th, but it's not too late at all to pledge a minute of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also, they have forms in the Bodhi Tree, in Alexandria's, and in the Phoenix bookstore, and at Fred Siegel's department store in Santa Monica, are just some of the places that they can get them.
Okay.
Or they can write me at 8033 Sunset Boulevard, Suite 486, and I would be glad to send them a pledge form.
Tell us about what's happening at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, this is very exciting. We're getting plans together to have an afternoon of music and celebration to experience peace in the peaceful environment, of course, of the bowl. And we will have celebrity announcers, yourself included.
Thank you. I don't know if it's a celebrity or not.
Well, I think you are, Bill.
You couldn't keep me away.
Yes. We'll have a peace meditation, and the International Children's Choir will perform, and they will get up, and they will accept the minutes from their, you know, that have been donated for their country. And so they will represent their various countries. And there will be birds of peace.